This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When you think of homeless populations, college students pursuing four-year degrees might not jump to mind. Homelessness on campus does not always look the same as homelessness on the streets. Often it means students without a place to stay end up couch surfing till they find a more permanent solution. It may be less visible, but it is no less important, and the problem is getting now a little more attention. Locally, researchers from NC State University are using data to name the problem and come up with solutions to meet all of the basic needs of the university's graduate and undergraduate populations. Joining me now to talk about that is Mary Haskett. She's a psychology professor and co-chair of the NC State Student Food and Housing Security Initiative. Mary, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Also with us, Miguel Ortiz-Cruz, a senior in graphic communications at NC State. Miguel, welcome to you. Good to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Mary, let's talk about the findings of your research. You surveyed a sample population of undergrad and graduate students at NC State. What'd you find?
That's right. Yes, we found that 14% of our students had experienced food insecurity over the course of a 30-day period. And food insecurity essentially means that you don't have the resources that you need to have sufficient nutritious food. We also found that almost 10% of our student body had experienced homelessness over a 12-month period.
What made you ask the question in the first place, or those questions?
Yeah, I had had some students who had struggled with housing insecurity. And when I started asking questions around campus, I realized that we really didn't have a lot of resources for students. And so, of course, being the good academic that I am, we collect data first to define and measure the problem before we go too deep into generating solutions. And so we decided to collect the data in fall of 2017.
Did the data you collected surprise you?
The food insecurity rates were not incredibly surprising because they're consistent with the state of North Carolina. So that didn't take us by surprise. We were a little shocked at 10% of our students experiencing homelessness. That took us by surprise.
And what form does that take? I mean, I sort of talked about, characterized it as maybe couch surfing, something that, you know, perhaps a lot of people are familiar with. Is that what it looks like, and has it changed over time?
Yeah, that's a great question. The most common form of homelessness for our students was couch surfing, but the second most common way that students have experienced homelessness is sleeping outside. So it's not all couch surfing. And I would like to say that couch surfing sounds kind of fun, right?
Right.
And I think everybody has spent a couple of nights with a friend on occasion. And that's really not what we're talking about when we're talking about doubling up. In this case, we're talking about students who are crowding into another student's dorm room or into somebody else's apartment. That person is at risk then of eviction. So, and students place themselves at risk.
Yeah, you're more vulnerable
when they're desperate and vulnerable, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Miguel, tell us a little bit about your story. You're a graduate student, right, at NC State?
No, I'm an undergraduate.
You're an undergrad.
Yeah.
What brought you to college in the first place?
So, I guess a quick story about it is college didn't become real until I got a letter from NC State. NC State. It was the Pac Promise Scholarship. They meet 100% of my financial needs. And it really, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be here.
Hmm. So you got 100%. You're going on a full ride?
Full ride.
All right. So that part's there. And yet you have described your experience there as living on the edge.
Yeah. It's something where, okay, if I were to try and, well, it wasn't that way until Hurricane Florence passed through 2 years ago. So when somebody said, oh, I'm going home for the break, there was a bit of sting because I knew that home isn't livable. Home was under construction because it had to be because of what the hurricane did. And prior to that, something happened prior to junior year and sophomore year, something happened at home where it wasn't necessarily a great time to be. So I thought, all right, let me stay home for the winter break. And housing, the price to stay on housing for the winter break, or the Thanksgiving break, actually, yeah, Thanksgiving break, was $400. What undergraduate from a low-income background has $400 laying around say, all right, I want to stay, let me stay?
And you're the first in your family to go to college? First generation?
First first to go to a 4-year institution. Yeah. My sister went to community college and then took online classes at a 4-year university. So
here you are, and $400 is the thing that can now break the whole system. And you actually had some savings, but again, coming back to the hurricane, you were helping your family out with that money, right?
Yeah, because if the situation were to happen again, thankfully it doesn't because of efforts that Dr. Haskett has contributed to. If I were to want to stay on campus, it is an option for me because to go home, home is not go home, go into my bed. Home is a motel. Home is a shelter. Granted, this was during the hurricane 2 years ago, right.
Right. And again, so whatever savings you had went to the family to help rebuild the house. Mm-hmm. So that's how close it is because hurricanes happen. $400, you can, Mary, have to replace a tire or get your car fixed. And you're going to need to get your car fixed to keep your job. And you might be more likely to need to get your car fixed because it's a used car. Because you didn't have a lot of money to begin with, right?
That's right. So I think Miguel's experience is one that's not uncommon. So our scholarships are fantastic. The more the better, of course. But we know that many of our students who have, quote-unquote, full ride are living on the edge, and those are the students who are most at risk.
Right, and again,
when something goes awry.
Right. So, and for first-generation students, they have not, maybe the families have not built wealth yet. They don't have that education, which is a building stone. On the edge, and again, when you think about the ways in which tuition is rising, student debt is increased, you sort of layer that on top. I know you just did the research just to get the numbers, and we've got them, thankfully. What are the implications? What does it mean to try to get a college education under these circumstances?
Right. So we have implemented across the university a number of programs to help fill some of those gaps. And so, for example, university housing now is staying open during most breaks. They used to close, and so students had to leave campus. So we have had some units, again, across campus that have stepped up in big ways. What we're missing is a comprehensive integrative plan to tie together these isolated resources so that students don't have to work so hard to navigate to solve these crises as they come up. So we just submitted in October a pretty comprehensive plan of action to our university leadership. So it's sort of a blueprint for addressing these issues.
What kind of response have you gotten?
We have not heard yet from leadership, but we expect to have a positive response.
What, Miguel, when you talked about the isolated services that might be available, did you try to access any of those? Did you ask for help on campus?
So, thankfully, I'm part of a program called TRIO Collegiate Programs. It's a federally funded, I think, since the 1980s, if I'm correct.
Good. I think we may go back before that, but keep going.
And thankfully, the people that work at TRIO, like Sarah, she's my counselor, works closely with all the resources that are available on campus. So as a student of TRIO, it's much easier since that's what their purpose and their mission is to help undergraduate students be successful.
What kind of services or
so a bit about TRIO, we do a lot. We recently got a program that helps students in TRIO or outside of TRIO, both. If they are interested in graduate school, it's attainable for them. Mm-hmm. We set them on a path to apply and get faculty mentors and all sorts of great stuff.
And is there any financial assistance, food assistance, housing assistance?
That's directly from TRIO?
Yeah.
No. But since we are connected with, since TRIO is sort of like the hub for student services, there's a lot of connections that, and a lot of potential connections that are easy to access.
Now, Mary, go ahead. You were going to say something, Mary.
Yeah, I was just going to add that TRIO is a federally funded program. Yeah. And one of the key provisions is a basic needs navigator and mentor for students in the TRIO program that helps them navigate these systems. So we would love to see those kinds of mentors available more widely on campus.
Well, who's eligible for TRIO and who's not, I guess?
Miguel, do you know the criteria?
So I'm pretty sure that in order to be eligible for TRIO, you would need to be either a low-income, a student from a low-income background, a first-generation student, and that's all I'm going to say for now.
Yeah. But I wonder then demographically who gets left out of the TRIO, you know, the possibility. Mm-hmm. And if you know anything about the demographics of people who report food insecurity or housing insecurity on campus.
Yeah, so it does tend to be the students from lower income families, lower under-resourced communities at large. And there are some other groups that tend to be a little more at risk. Students who identify as LGBTQ on the spectrum tend to be at higher risk. Students that are non-white, minority students, tend to be at higher risk. Mm-hmm.
So what you've looked at some initiatives, too, and I know that you're working with an architecture professor to address some of this. Talk about that initiative.
Yeah, really exciting. So Tom Berry taught a studio course for graduate design students in the fall, and they explored, investigated, and designed affordable, innovative housing for students. And they actually developed these residence halls on real property that's owned by NC State, E.S. King Village, for those who know the NC State campus, and the corner of Hillsborough and Oberlin. So obviously those designs would need to be fully fleshed out, but it's an exciting start.
How would this work then? What are we talking about? Is this just housing that would be affordable? Are there services that are also attached to this or integrated?
Yeah, this is supportive housing, so it would include space for these basic needs navigators, space for food pantry, space for childcare for parents who are in school and need childcare. So it would be wraparound services.
Miguel, I wonder if you had any sense, either personally or from other students you might know, about any stigma that might be attached to asking for help.
Yeah, it's not just in NC State. It's not just in college. It's a societal thing where asking for help is stigmatized. Asking for help means, I mean, it could have connotations of, oh, you're lazy, that's why you're asking for help, or, oh, financial situations that led you to this. But really, it's me personally, I have no shame in asking for help. I know that when I need it, the easiest way to get help is to, well, ask for help. Hmm. Other than, I can put myself in a hard situation where I'm researching and finding answers out for myself. But if the answers are already available, there should be no shame in just asking.
So in your case, there was help available, and as you said, you weren't ashamed to ask, and you got some. So I wonder, in your case, if you had found yourself ever saying to yourself, I can't go on like this, can't do this.
Could you elaborate, can't go on?
Like you'd have to quit school. I can't afford this anymore. I can't afford to be here.
Oh, that's not an option. Yeah. I was given an opportunity that I don't know how many students across NC State that are from my background, so I guess a little bit about me. I come from a very small high school. We graduated about 100. I can tell you that we were surrounded on all four sides by three of those sides was corn and one of them was a ranch. So it was very rural, very rural. And I don't know how many students that are also in my situation across NC State across the state of North Carolina has had an opportunity to be like that. And so back to the thing where you said, has it ever crossed my mind that, oh, I can't go on like this? I can't think that. I have to think I'm going to get through this because there's no other way. I've been given a golden opportunity and I have to take advantage of everything that's available to me.
And Mary, I know this goes beyond the scope of your research, your immediate research, but is there any way to tell more generally what the impact might be for students who are trying to complete their education under these added pressures? Are people leaving in greater numbers? Do we know? Is it making it more difficult actually to finish?
Nationally, we know it makes it more difficult to finish. Not sure I can speak to NC State data. There was a stopout study done fairly recently, stopout colloquial for dropout. And we know that two of the top reasons for students leaving were financial and then lack of a sense of community and not feeling belonging. And oftentimes we know that students who are struggling with food insecurity and housing insecurity do feel isolated. Miguel is gesturing that, yeah. that isolation. You know that students have that experience.
Mm-hmm. It's something that eats away because I know that it can be where I'm not. It's sort of like an otherness, and that's where the shame that you mentioned comes in. It shouldn't be that way. It really shouldn't, because in order to get through this, you need solidarity and you need a community to, like, you know, lift you up.
Yeah, well, I mean, and when you say that, if you come from a school where there's more corn than students, you know, and then you feel lonely in a place like NC State, that tells me a lot about the social nature of the place. So, Mary, what, nationally, do we know, is there much more of this research being done now so that we can get a bigger picture?
Yes, it is. It's sort of a spike in interest is happening. There's a Hope Center that is really national leader in this realm. Sarah Goldrick Rabb leads that work, and she's done studies across the country now on a larger scale, indicating that rates are incredibly high and surprising to most people.
Any place in the country that is a model for change?
The state of California has invested at the state level, and they're really trying to have a comprehensive integrative plan statewide. So I think that we could learn from them, and part of the call to action that our steering committee generated was based on some of those national learnings.
I want to thank you both for being on our program. Mary Haskett is a psychology professor and researcher at NC State University. Miguel Ortiz Cruz is a senior graphics communications major at NC State. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Amanda Magnus, Grant Holla-Moorman, and Katie Barron. Jenny Lawson's our technical director, Josie Taras, our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.